Hello and welcome to Indie Author Diaries, a weekly diary podcast with two indie writer mums. Your show hosts are Sarah Gay.
Hi everyone.
And me, Lisa M. White. And we are chatting about all things indie writing. So this is take two because someone who shall remain nameless didn't press record. Yes, that would be me. I'm going to blame it on the cold because, you know, why not? And tech problems, because I always seem to be abundant with them. Okay, today we are chatting about editing. Why are we chatting about editing? Well, if you remember back in episode 12, Sarah and I had a bit of a soapbox moment about people who are letting the team down by not putting their best work out there. And so we thought that we would, you know, go over the basics of what makes a good book as an indie, like how we can put our best work out there. So we have covered cover designs with Angela Stevens. That's episode 13. Last week we were chatting with Ian Andrew about formatting. And so this week we've got Alex McGilvery from Canada chatting about editing. Hello, Alex.
Hello. Glad you're here.
Yeah, it's good to have you. Okay, so let's get stuck into it. Sarah, would you like to ask the first question?
Well, I mean, we're going to go straight back to Alex, and we're going to ask Alex how he got into editing.
So I got into the editing business. I was doing a lot of beta reading for friends. And I realized I was writing almost as much on my comments for beta reading as they were writing in their books. So I decided, well, if I was going to be putting that much work into it, I should get paid for it. So just about 4 years ago or so, somewhere like that, I started up as a freelance editor. And I think I've probably edited 60 or 70 books since then.
And you're a writer too. How many books have you written?
I have 16 books in publication.
Oh, cool. I've actually got a couple of yours. I haven't read them yet, but I've got them. They look sounded really interesting. Yeah. And do you want to, like, do you have a specialty with your editing? Do you edit all books, or like, do you have a genre that you prefer?
Anything with words.
Like it.
I love it.
My line that is just if there's abuse, gratuitous abuse. You know, sometimes things happen to characters that you that are part of the plot. But I make sure if somebody experiences a traumatic event, that has to echo through the rest of the book. It's not just like, okay, this is a plot point just to get the two people to meet. No, it doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
But I've edited horror. I've edited romance. I've edited mysteries. I've nonfiction books, sci-fi books, weird genres that you couldn't place anywhere. You know, basically, because the sense is the story, the basic idea of story is the same regardless of genre. And even if you're writing memoirs, you still have to create, you still have to build your world and build your characters and tell a story. Or it's just going to be this boring book about, you know, I did this on this day and I did that. That's what I do.
Yeah, cool. That's a good segue into the next question, actually, which is, would you like to talk us through the stages of editing?
Okay, the first stage, which is what I do, is the content editing. There's also people who talk about developmental and structural editing. There's nuanced differences between them, but essentially what you're looking at is plot, character, tone, making sure that your book is consistent, all those things that are groundwork for building your story on top of. If you don't have them, then your story is going to wobble. And then the next level is where you start looking at prose, And that's line editing. There's some people who call it copy editing, except for copy editors. But that's where you start looking at the paragraphs, the sentences, how they're structured, how they're paced. Are you working them, making them do as much work as possible? And then copy editing is making sure that everything is correct. So the grammar is right, the spelling is right, if you're quoting things, that it's quoted correctly, that the information is proper, that there's consistency through the book. You know, you don't have a character with blue eyes in one page and then they turn out to have brown eyes in the next one. And then, of course, lastly, you have proofreading. And proofreading is really the last person who should read your book before you push that magic publish button. They're just to make sure that errors haven't been introduced while you're in formatting or, you know, other corrections.
And you were saying just before that you recommend getting like your better readers in between from getting your content done to your proofread?
Yeah, because what you need, when you get your content done, you know that that's where you're going to pick up the story issues and the character issues. So you want to you want to deal with those as much as possible before you bring your beta readers in. Because if you're giving them a story that you know has got holes in it, then they're going to be distracted from doing their real job, which is how does the book work for the reader? So you have those basic foundational issues more or less dealt with. You give them to the beta readers and then they can tell you, does this book work? You know, if you give a beta, if your beta readers are like, well, you know, I started and haven't got around to finishing it, that tells you something.
Yeah.
Actually, what I do when that happens is I ask them what chapter they stopped at.
Yeah.
Oh. Because if they're all stopping around about the same chapter, then that's what you need to look at.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's their job is not editing. Their job is to reflect to you how well the story works.
Yeah.
And then you do the fix on that, and then you do your line editing or the copy editing, proofreading kind of deal.
And just going back a step. So there are 5 stages of editing. So some editors work differently than others though. So I've now worked with 2 editors. So my first editor, I met through Sarah, and Kim basically did everything. She did a couple of passes, but she did everything in there. And so I thought that was how all editors did it until I met my second editor, Lara, and Lara freelances for publishing houses. And so she actually does 5 different stages of editing. And so for her, it really is a different, like her eyes are just looking for one thing with each sweep of the manuscript. And she's certainly available to talk about issues. Like she's very nurturing with indies. But yeah, it was really interesting. And so I think what I found was important there was I needed to make sure I was asking for the right edit. Because if I'd had asked for a proofread, she would have given me a proofread, but then I would have gotten all, you know, negative reviews because there would have been holes in the story or inconsistencies in the structure and stuff. So how do you edit? Like, what are your, when someone sends you a manuscript, how do you approach it?
Well, when I'm doing my test edit, I edit it as if I do 2 passes. I edit the test edit as if I'm doing 2 passes at once. So they get the chapter by chapter comments about character structure, plot arcs, and all that stuff. But then I also go back and I do some of the line edits to show them this is how you can work your prose to support the stuff that I'm talking about in terms of plot and character structure. You know, using some of the technical things to make your story stronger. But when I'm working on a book, I will do 2 passes, separate passes. I do one where I just read, I just make comments at the end of the chapter about this is what's going on as far as I can see. These are problems that I can see. This is how I suggest you might fix them. And I point out other things. Sometimes I'll point out things and I say, but don't worry about these right now because we'll catch them on the second pass. But I do that so that when I'm reading the stuff, I can remember that, okay, I'm looking for this. Mm-hmm. And that they revise after I've done the chapter by chapter. And then I do the second pass. And then occasionally, if I'm not, sometimes my brain gets a little unfocused. If I'm not trusting myself, I'll do a third pass where I just do a really quick read, like the same as a beta reader would do, just to see whether the whole thing comes together and gels properly. And I usually find a few things there that, you know, when you're reading the whole story without slowing down to stop, it's different. So I always find a few things that I might have missed the first two passes.
Yeah. But you're looking primarily at content and structure and the motivations with the characters.
And then the second pass is how do you make that work?
Yeah.
The technicalities of showing character, of showing plot, of, you know, all this, the famous show, not tell, dictum, and all that stuff. I suggest to people, if you got the money, I would still do a line editor after, you know, I've done the work, because a line editor is going to look at the prose differently than I do.
Yeah. So that's because that was my next question, was with indies. So often, you know, people are already working another job, or they've got families, or they're not working, but, you know, only one person in the house is, so there's not always a lot of money. Mm. And one of the excuses, not an excuse because it's a valid reason, you don't have money, but often, you know, you'll say, oh, well, I can't afford it, so I'm not going to do it. But then they're not putting out a book that's going to get the reviews they want or the sales they want. So it kind of backfires and bites you on the ass anyway, I would say. So in terms of the best advice for indies, if you can't afford an editor with, you know, multiple stages of editing, or working with different editors to get your book out there, or any, you know, what do you think for indies the best way for them to spend their editing money is on, like someone who would do more of a structural content edit? I mean, I personally feel that that's the one where you're going to see the biggest bang for your buck. Maybe that's because I've got a high tolerance for typos. But, you know, I find what really pulls me out of the story is when the story doesn't work and when the characters are really inconsistent, you know. So one minute they love each other, the next minute they hate each other, but there's absolutely no rational reason for it whatsoever. And how they're getting from point A to point B just makes no sense. Or, you know, they just magically arrive at point B. So, yeah, what are you thinking? I mean, would you agree, Sarah? Do you find the story, when the story holds together, you're willing to forgive a little bit on the grammar side, or does it all annoy you?
Right now, hence why we had our soapbox moment, is all of it, to be honest. I don't mind a few editing issues. I don't mind a few misspelled words. I can actually deal with that. And I probably don't want to go back and look at some of my earlier work because I'm sure I'm going to find it in there. I think what got to me is just lately we've had these excuses, because we do talk to quite a few people in the indie world, and we full on support them. And this is why we read so many independently published books. But our biggest excuse has been, oh, well, we couldn't afford editing. Then don't put your book out. I'm going to say that. I can be hated all you want. Don't put your book out if you're not going to willingly even save up. We've all had to do it and get it edited. I think it's so important because you're not just letting yourself down and your readers down, but we do represent an independent community of writers. And I think it's important. And editing is my biggest issue. I can forgive a book cover. I can forgive a formatting. But editing is my number one priority, even if it's just a line edit. But it's so important, especially with the structure, like you said, if you're a new writer, you want to get that structure you know, solid. And I think what also stops a lot of people is they're afraid of editors. They're afraid of the feedback they're going to get. They don't want to hear their book might suck. They don't want to hear their characters don't gel. And I do not be afraid of editors. These people, they are going to help you put out your best work. Like I get a lot, like I was telling you guys just before, I'm pretty much good with the structure now. I know how my book's going to go, but I love getting my manuscript back with line edits. And I'm like, wow, that sentence was awesome. I'm so glad they changed that. Because I have a tendency to write dyslexic where somehow my sentence is back to front. I don't know how, but it makes no sense. But it did when I wrote it. And they just make it shine. And I'm like, wow, I can't believe this is my work. I'm going to take credit for that.
What do you reckon, Alex?
Yeah.
What are your feelings of this?
Especially the first few books that you bring out, you need to have that content, structural, the foundational stuff. Because if you can't write a good story, if you don't know how to take your story that's in your head and put it on the page in a way that works, nothing else is going to matter. You know, you have to have that foundational stuff. Once you've got to the point where you have a feel for structure, you understand how you work, especially if you write series, then you can get away perhaps without the developmental edit, and you go to the line edit. But you need to really know your stuff.
Yeah, I think your skills will evolve over time if you're practicing the craft and working at it, and you do the, you know, the rewrites when necessary and all of that, and you're actively reading, because I think you can pick up holes in other people's work easier than your own.
Yeah, but one of the things is critiquing other people's work helps you with your own writing. So even if you just, you know, when you read a book, if you sit down and not do a little more in more depth in a review, just look at the structure, what works, what doesn't work, why, and then that will inform your writing. And you know, when you're worrying about, okay, I'm not sure this is working, then you can go back to that and say, well, this is what worked and what didn't work, so what am I doing that's similar or different? And there are ways to work on your structure. I tell people to use outlines as an editing tool. So even if you've written it from an outline, throw that away, or don't throw away, but put it out of the way, and then outline it again based on what the book actually says. So you go through, you're reading the book, you write down, okay, this is where this is where the inciting incident is, the plot point, the pinch point, yada, yada, yada. And then you look at how it fits on the page. Are there, you know, are the stretches, are they too close together, or are they too stretched apart? Maybe you're missing one. I had a client who sent me a book, said, I'm stuck, I don't know what to do. And I said, well, you're stuck because you ended the book. You know, if you want a longer book, you have to move the ending farther down the line. And it's like, okay, so that's the kind of thing that writing an outline will help you with. And I was, there's this new software that I am test driving at the moment called Fictionary, like dictionary, but with an F. And you dump your book into their program, and it comes up with this plot arc, you know, it's sort of the digital magic. It comes up with the plot arc and what scenes you have in the places, and then whether they're sort of close to the where they're supposed to be or not. And like any other software, I argue with it, and I have constant arguments with any software, whether it's Pro Writing Aid or Fictionary or some other program. I'm always arguing, and there you can't just blindly trust what they're telling you. But what they do is force you to look at your book in a different way, look at your prose in a different way, And that's tremendously helpful.
Yeah.
You know, that even if it's a computer forcing you to look at something with a new pair of eyes is tremendously helpful.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting what you were saying earlier about looking, like when you're reading books and looking at the structure. Ever since I started writing more seriously, I mean, I've always written stories, but I think it was back in 2002, I actually did a local course on how to write romances for Mills and Boone. from, you know, that's when I started buying books on writing and started and joined the local writing group and, you know, started looking more at structure. And ever since then, every time I read a book, I find I tend to look at things like the structure and the characters, and being able to read it is great and pick it out is great. And then you write your own and you realize, oh, shit, I've got to rewrite this whole section. So it's a thing where you see, you know, being able to see and pick it out is different than being able to do. But what I've found is sometimes my enjoyment of reading had changed because I found I could too easily pick out, whoa, this is weird, this is out of the blue, or this character is so inconsistent here. And it really threw me out. But the sign of a good story now is when I actually forget to even look at characters, arcs, development, whatever. I just am so absorbed in that book that I completely forget to analyze it at all. And I figure that's the sign of a really good book. And yep. Yeah, and I find even when I go back to reading, I'm going to be more conscious about it this time, and I still miss it because I don't know, when it's seamless, it's good. So
there are books that I have read a chapter, you know, 5 or 6 times in order to get the comments that it needs. I have sort of this digital gold star that I give them if they get me all the way through the chapter and I haven't commented.
I love it.
And actually what I do, which is really strange, is I read the chapter backwards. So I'm reading it. I'm just looking at the sentence or the paragraph, and then I look at and I'm reading it backwards, and I find that that helps really focus on the prose rather than the story. Because if it's doing that, well, if it's pulling you that in, you don't need work with the story. It's just prose.
Yeah.
That's one of my tips for doing the copy editing, line editing, proofreading. If you can't afford somebody, is read your story backwards. It's a horrible thing because it's just that you just have to plug away at it because it's not interesting because everything's not in plot order, but it's a fantastic way to analyze your prose and see what you're doing right and what you're doing, you know, not so right. It helps you pick out the repeated words if you don't have software that shows them to you. And it just really helps you see the story, you know, not the story, but you see your words differently. And that's important that as a writer, you write the story, but then also as a writer, you have to be able to examine your prose, look at your pacing, and work on the prose level, you know, work at the really granular level to make sure that, you know, it's not just flashes of brilliance through your book, but that's the whole thing is just going to pull people in and not let them go until the end of it.
That's a really interesting tip.
Yeah, that's definitely one way to do it. I think someone suggested to us about, depending on where you write, because I write in Scrivener, and they said when you finished a chapter, get Scrivener to read it back to you. Yeah. And I actually tried that, and oh boy, my chapters did not flow at all. It was terrible, even in a robot voice. So.
You know, right, having the computer read it back to you or reading it yourself out loud. A lot of times when I'm doing line edits, if something is sort of ishy and I'm like, okay, look, you know, read this out loud because I don't think it works. I think you could do this or this or this, but you know what? Write a few versions of it, read them out loud and then see which one you like best. And they're like, you know, what if I'm going to read it out loud, no, what difference does putting a comma here or there mean? I said, you'd be surprised. You know, if you're reading out loud and you're out of breath, then, you know, your pacing is off.
Yeah.
Yes, I have a lot of sticky sentences. I use Pro Writing Aid, like you mentioned before.
Yes.
And I have a lot of sticky sentences. So just trying to nail those down is a challenge. But I like what you said before about outlining, because I was telling you before that for a good 3 years, I was a pantster. And I hated an outline. To me, sitting down and doing an outline was, you know, to me it was wasting time when I could be writing. But I'm absolutely in love with, my outlines are messy, but they work for me. But I can't live without an outline now, because like you said before, I would pants, but then I would get stuck and I wouldn't know where to go next with the story. And I could waste 2 weeks thinking how I'm going to write myself out of this. And so I think what you said before is right. You know, even if you're a pantser, you know, go half pantser, half outline, whatever works for you, but make sure you've got that something written down, so you've got that structure and your highs and your lows, and if it's going to work. And you know, I'm an editor's nightmare sometimes. I am that person who writes, you know, blue eyes and then brown eyes and then green eyes. And then, you know, Derek becomes Alex, and Alex becomes Stephen, and I'm constantly, or so-and-so. I write a lot of so-and-so said.
I do square brackets, Gillian's son. I'm meaning I'll go back and look it up afterwards, and then I'll try and write my little
Seriously, the amount of times poor Kim writes Sarah. What eye colour are we going for here? I thought she had blonde hair in the last chapter. Now she's got raven. What is going on? Thank God for editors. Okay, so how do we find an editor? Where do you think is the best place for us to find an editor?
Well, there's a few places you can look for editors. The first is talk to other writers. Find out who they have used for editing and what did they think of that person's work. You know, if they've used the same editor more than once, it says something, you know, quite substantial about the editor. So word of mouth is tremendously important.
Yeah.
There's also places on Amazon, the Kindle board, which they have a yellow pages, or they, I don't know if they still do. It's been ages since I've been on there, but you can, editors, there's hundreds, thousands of editors who advertise there. So you can scroll through and say, okay, you know, I'm looking for a content editor, a line editor. That's a little bit chancier because you've got no sense of what they've come before. Another thing to do is to look at books that you like, especially indie books, and see whether they've acknowledged their editor in their comments. Like if you search Alex McGilvery on Amazon, you'll have dozens of books that I didn't write, but my name is there as an editor. So you can look at, in these books were edited by so-and-so, you know, they may be worth contacting and say, you know, would you be interested in working with me? And then once you've made contact with the editor, you want to test edit.
Do a sample edit.
You know, any editor says, I don't do test edits, don't do them. Just run. Don't go anywhere near them. And if they want you to pay for a test edit, no. Test edit should be free. They should be enough for you to get a really good sense of their style, the way that they work, and, you know, whether their style meshes with your style. Now, I do a 5,000-word test edit, which is huge. That's usually like the first chapter and a half And by the end of my test edit, I can often tell people how their book is going to end.
Yeah.
You know, I get, okay, here, I've got this. This is what's going to happen. You know, these are sort of the areas that I think you're going to get. And they're like, how did you get that 5,000 words? Well, I reviewed books for 30 years. I've been writing all my life. I've been publishing books for 10 years. So in editing, so I get an idea of how the stories work.
Yeah.
And what they introduce at the beginning is so important for the entire rest of the book. Because if you don't, and to do that introduction, if you don't do that first chapter first properly, then, you know, you're out of luck. I met a guy, read a guy who was on, he was a slush pile reader, you know, with a traditional publisher.
Yeah.
Because I get some clients that are hire me to do work, you know, that they're sending off to traditional publishers. And he has what he has this called the spaghetti sauce test. Because he'll be sitting there reading the books while he's making supper. And he says, the ones that have the most spaghetti sauce splashed on them are the good books because they've held my interest long enough to get, you know, for me to make a mess of them.
I love that.
That's what you want.
Yeah.
You want to grab that attention at the beginning of the story so that even these jaded professionals, you know, hang in there and keep going.
Yeah. I had this book about years ago. I think Kate Greenville is the author, but I might have that wrong. And it was called The First 5 Pages. Yep. And it was basically about how, yeah, an editor for a, you know, mainstream publishing house, they can read those first 5 pages and they know, they can already see what your problems are with your writing, how you write, how the rest of the book is going to evolve and whether or not it's worth them pursuing as well. And it's quite interesting. And I think the more beta reads you read for people, that way, you know, like the unpolished books, the more you can see as well, like how the book flows on from the beginning of the book and the writer. Like, you know, if we read Angela's books, they're great, you know, no issues. But I'm also in the Alliance of Independent Authors. That's how I met Alex. And I beta read for some other people who like a newer authors, and you can start to see things that pan out, and presumably they can see that with my stuff too. So so it's just read widely basically. So Alex, what would your advice be on helping people prepare their work to show an editor? Does it need to be sparkly and perfect? I mean, obviously if you're sending off to a publishing house, you want it to be sparkly and perfect, but if you're sending it off to your own editor first, how do people prepare their manuscripts?
Well, it depends on what level of editing you're looking at. Like for the content, for the structural foundational stuff, I tell people don't worry about grammar and spelling as much. Mind you, know, if you do a pass and you fix the stuff that jumps out at you immediately, because, you know, yeah, it gets distracting when, you know, that you have people smirking at each other 20 times in a single chapter. But you really want to focus on the story, because you want to have the best story that you can produce going to your editor, so that then they can, you're already starting halfway up the staircase. If it's really a dog's breakfast, then you're going to have to do several back and forths. I have a couple of clients that I do mentoring with, and they basically get unlimited passes until the book is ready. And that costs a fair chunk of money. It takes a fair amount of time. But these are usually first-time authors who are really need to learn that craft.
Mm, it's so valuable, though, to have that kind of feedback.
Essentially, it's a private writing course. You know, yeah. Everything I know about writing, which is not everything to be known about writing, but, and that gives them a start. And then the beta readers, like I said before, you come in between the content and the the line edit. And for that, what you want to do is, one of my favorite tricks, and it's absolutely horrific, is you take the usual overused words, that, just, only, was, you know, and your own personal overused words, and we all have them, the ones that we use way too much. And you use search and replace. And what you do is you replace, you just do a search, you replace that. You turn track changes on. And then you do a search and replace for that. And it marks with a little red box every single use of that in your book. So I did this for the book that I wrote, not this summer, the summer before. It was the third one in my thriller trilogy. And so 95,000 words, and I had 1,500 that in the book. You know, so search and destroy, you know, but they jump out at you. And then you can go through and examine each individual occurrence and fix it. And this goes to the next thing that I tell people. And actually I have an entire workshop built around this, is that the mistakes that you make in your first draft aren't mistakes. They're placeholders.
Yeah.
So if you have that, usually when you have that, it's because you're trying to emphasize something. So how do you emphasize it without using that? If you have said too much, it's you have a dialogue, you need to have beats. So how do you anchor that dialogue into your plot, into your setting? If you're using smirt too often, you know, what other words can you use? How do you challenge that? So those are the kind of things that you can work on yourself to be, you know, before you hand it off to your line editor.
Cool. So Alex, how can people find your editing services and this course? Is this on your website? Your how to prepare your manuscript?
I have three websites. My editing website is Celtic Frog Editing.
I love that name.
Yeah. And I have all kinds of articles about different aspects of writing, different aspects of editing, you know, how to prepare your manuscript for editing, you know, a basic how to do some of these, you know, these different tricks and things of self-editing. And I have one that's on how you use your mistakes to edit.
Oh, cool.
You know, I'm working that into a full presentation. And there's some other articles just about emotions or dialogue description, you know, just really, really basic stuff like that. And I try to write somewhat tongue-in-cheek, so there's not just boring, this is how you write it, but it's a little bit, you know, interesting while people are working their way through it. And then there's links, all my three sites are interlinked. And my review site is Celtic Frog Reviews. And I don't do very much in the way of reviews anymore, because I just don't have the capacity to read, you know, 50 or 100 a year and write reviews for them anymore. But people can still submit books for reviews, and I'll look at them and say yes or no. And then my personal writing page is alexmcgilvery.com, you know, just to break the mold a little bit. And that's where you can find my own writing, my books, samples of my books, short stories, things like that.
Cool.
So if you just search Alex McGilvery, you'll probably find one or the other of those websites, and then that'll link you to the editing stuff.
I'll put the link on. We've got a page on my website, so lisamwhite.com/podcast, or just go to the homepage and click the podcast button. And if you scroll down to episode 15, which is this episode, I will make sure I've got a link to your editing website there. But I'm actually thinking, because we've got a few resources that we've mentioned, that I might just create like a podcast resources page and put the links on there as well. So it'll be easy to find, and maybe Sarah can design a nice little button picture for me that says podcast resources. And yeah, that way it'll be easy to find as well. Yeah, alrighty. Well, yeah.
I encourage people to take advantage of test edits. You know, even if you're not sure about hiring an editor, you know, get some test edits done.
I
don't mind doing a test edit for people, even if they never planned to hire an editor. I'll do the test edit for them, because you want that experience of being edited. And often, once you have that experience, you know, you're going to run out and find the money to pay for it, because you can feel how much of a difference it makes in your writing and the final quality.
So,
you know, it doesn't cost anything to get a text edit. So try it out and, you know, go from there.
Yeah, I think it's a great, cool. It's a good advice. I mean, you know, like we were saying before, everything you could ever do wrong in indie publishing, I have done it. And my first two editors were shocking. I never knew anything about a test edit. I paid, and it was so bad that, you know, thankfully I found a third editor that was amazing. I'm still with her now, and she fixed everything up. So definitely do that test edit. It's one of the best pieces of advice that somebody could really tell you. So hold on to that, because that's right. If you've got to pay for it, for a test edit, then don't do it. I think that's a really good piece of advice, Alex. So
and I think that brings me back to something I was going to ask you and I forgot. So that brings it to mind. Thank you, Sarah. So the basic, you know, if we were going to leave people with an action list of what to do, like Angela gave a lot of amazing tips. Ian gave some really good tips last week. So Alex, the action list for someone to do. So write your story, ideally do a bit of an outline so that you can see how the plot fits together. Then make sure you've got your structure working as much as you can. Send it to your editor. If you don't have an editor, search out some editors and at least see how the test edit goes, and then decide who you're going to go with. And then after you've done your first edit with your editor, send it to some beta readers to see if the story works. And then you're looking at your refining, so your line copy and proofreading.
Then
press publish. And oh, I've also missed some steps. There was like read your manuscript out loud. So that comes maybe before sending it to your editor.
That's more of an ongoing technique. It'll do one thing for structural stuff. If you're reading out loud, you'll hear the holes in the story. But it also works for line editing, in terms of you hear your prose and where it's strong, where it's weak, and it's a great way to proofread. So read it out loud more than once. Have the computer read it to you. Have somebody else read it out loud. And, you know, all these things are ways. And then I talked about reading the story backwards.
Yeah, that was really easy.
To isolate the individual words and sentences from the story so that you're not just reading what you expect is there. And each time you do an edit, you get edited, you know, take note of what you've learned and put that into, you know, what you're writing the next time. And it's a slow process, but eventually a lot of this stuff will become second nature, and then you find a whole new level of mistakes that you're making and need to be fixed.
Yeah, like an onion, isn't it? The layers. The layers of learning being revealed, the gold underneath. Love it. Okay, are there any parting words? Do you have anything you'd like to add, Sarah or Alex?
Oh, me today? What? Oh, I love it. have I got any words of wisdom? I don't think, well, I don't really have any words of wisdom today. But like I said before, you know, one of my biggest must-haves are editors. Sorry, you know, find someone great like Alex here. Find some great better readers. I have some amazing better readers. I'm speaking to one of them. Lisa's one of my But do not skimp on the editing because you can't afford it. We can all save up, people. It's one of the most, if you want your book to be broad, I really recommend that you get it done.
I think there's something in that. I mean, it costs a lot, but so does publishing a book that gets one-star reviews and, you know, comments of this is poorly edited, this looks like a dog's breakfast or whatever. I mean, they don't really go away easily, even if you edit and re-upload. So, yeah, a bit work on this end. And if it takes longer, and this is something I found, I haven't set a firm publish date at the moment because I'm still practicing the craft and it's taking me time to get my book ready to put it out there. So rather than say, oh, I'm going to release my book on, you know, New Year's Eve. No, it's probably going to be April, you know, because it's going to take longer for me to get it ready. I'm not going to set that date until the first couple are ready. I mean, once you've written 10, 15, your skill level you're in a different place, you know. But if this is your first book or your first couple, don't get into that habit of just pumping them out and not even making an attempt to refine or polish them. Take a little bit of time. So what about you, Alex? Got any final parting words?
What I'd suggest to people is, like I said before, there aren't any bad books. They're just books that aren't ready yet.
Yeah, I like that.
So, you know, don't get down on yourself if you don't like your story. It can be fixed. You know, you can come back and you can work on it. And the last thing I tell people to do before they hit the publish button is turn off all the editing brain, all the critiquing brain, everything that you've done, all the work that you've done to get to this point, and then just read your book like you were a reader.
Hmm.
And yes, if you don't enjoy your book, it's not ready yet.
Yeah.
You should be to the point where you're thinking, man, I wish I wrote this book.
I like that.
No, it's so true. I put my books aside for a month because if I keep reading them over and over, I wind up hating my own stuff. I put them aside for a month, you know, and I picked one up recently and I'm just crying at my own work. I was like, damn, this was really good. I can't believe this. That doesn't happen all the time. That does not happen all the time. But I pulled at my own heartstrings. And I think if I hadn't have put it aside for a good month, then I wouldn't have seen that. But at the same time, I saw what needed to be fixed as well.
Yeah. I tell people that they need to let it rest between each stage.
Yes, absolutely.
But the whole point of reading it that last time is if you don't have confidence in your book, you're not going to be able to sell it.
That's so true. I said that last week, didn't I?
We have this whole imposter syndrome thing going on.
Yeah, it's like everything we say, Sarah, I really think this. And then the next minute you hear some expert say it who's got like podcasts with hundreds of thousands of followers and you're like, see, I'm so on the ball. But we totally said this, Sarah. So thank you, Alex, for saying what I've been thinking.
She didn't pay me at all.
No, I didn't. We are in no way affiliated. We aren't. It's true. Alrighty, guys. Well, I think it's time to wrap that up then. So if you have any questions for us, any comments you'd like to make, come and visit us on the Instagram page, which is at Indie Author Diaries. You could leave us a message on Anchor. You could leave us a message on Facebook because we now have a Facebook page that Sarah created. So come and say hello. Email us. The information's on my website, lisamwhite.com, or Sarah. And obviously, if you've got any questions for Alex, contact Alex. We'll have his link on the podcast page. And he's already given it. Have you got social media as well? Like, do you have a Facebook page, Alex?
I have Facebook. I don't do much else. I'm just lazy, but I do have a Facebook author page.
Sorry, so there was a little bit of static there. So you have a Facebook author page? Okay.
Yes, I don't have much in the way of other social media because I'm just too lazy. I don't spend that much time on different social media. I'd rather be writing or working on my...
I think you have a healthy understanding of boundaries and what you're willing to do.
Yes. We've been talking about that.
Yeah. So, all right, cool. Well, there we go, people. Any final words, Sarah? No? We're cool?
Nope. All done. I did my final words.
All right, everybody.
Thanks for giving me the chance to talk to you. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks, lovely to meet you, Alex. See you next week, everybody. Bye.
Bye.